Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. This afternoon, the Oklahoma Policy Institute will pay tribute to its co-founder and former executive director, David Blatt, a frequent guest on this program, with a farewell event today at 4:30 at the IDL Ballroom in downtown Tulsa. During much of his tenure, Blatt seemed to be a voice in the wilderness, decrying the impact of Oklahoma state leadership's obsession with cutting taxes, saying that approach was unsustainable for state spending and education, mental health, and social service funding. Seemingly, the state's leadership has come around to that viewpoint. Today, Blatt will be honored, and attendees will have a chance to meet his successor, Onawake Rose. Rose was born and raised in Oklahoma and is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. She returns to Oklahoma from Washington, D.C., where she was deputy director and interim executive director of the National Congress of American Indians, a representative organization serving American Indian and Alaska Native tribal governments and communities. I spoke with them both late last week about the continuing focus of their Public Policy Institute. David and Onawake, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you.
It's interesting we're talking about the future of OK policy today when 313,000 signatures requesting a vote on State Question 802 on Medicaid expansion were just delivered to the Secretary of State. I know expansion of Medicaid specifically and better access to health care has been an important issue for OK policy, really, since its beginnings. Is this a first step towards accomplishing that goal? Do you think that's taking place now?
I think this is a really important step. As you said, this has been an issue for OK policy for way too long. We launched in 2008, so a year before passage of the Affordable Care Act. And it was in 2012 that the Supreme Court had its unfortunate ruling, leaving it up to the states. And Oklahoma has stood by year after year, refusing to bring back federal tax dollars and allowing likely around 200,000 low-income working-age adults to go without the health coverage they need that allows them to fill a prescription, see a doctor, deal with mental illness or addiction in a timely, affordable basis. So it's encouraging that the response from Oklahomans was so overwhelmingly positive to the petition. The 313,000 that they turned in this week is a record number of signatures. And I think there's good reason to be hopeful that when this gets on the ballot next year, that the outcome will be positive. And I think it's one of a number of signs that actually have me fairly encouraged about the direction the state is slowly moving in.
Onawake, I would assume this is going to be a priority to get facts out about State Question 802 for OK policy in the next few months and over the next year.
Absolutely. Actually, later this afternoon, our group is getting together and we're going to start talking about what our priorities will be for the next legislative session and Medicaid and making sure that we get the correct information out there is the top of the list for the staff.
I want to follow up on something David said is seeing a change in the state's leadership philosophy of funding state government and their priorities. In coming back to Oklahoma, was this something you saw?
Absolutely. Right. I was really excited to be able to come back to the state. I think the governor said at the very beginning of the year when he came on that he was looking forward to making some really specific changes and turns, right? He wants to make Oklahoma a top 10 state. He specifically mentioned education and reducing the number of people that we have in jails. And as such, actually over the last year, he and the legislature have made those steps. We still have a long way to go. But the fact that Oklahoma is looking across the board at ways that they can, regardless of party lines, lift and elevate to make sure that all Oklahomans can thrive around these issues is really important. And it's something that I was excited to be able to step back into.
If I can ask you, David, about this progress you're seeing, you think it's a change in philosophy or more a step towards pragmatism?
I think there's a combination of both. We had a period of time earlier in this decade where there was pursuit of a pretty strict ideological agenda. And I think maybe most exemplary of that, if we remember back in 2012, about 7 years ago, you had the governor at the time, Mary Fallon, say that her number one priority was to eliminate the state income tax, the state's largest single revenue source. And we had seen tax cuts implemented under the previous governor in the mid-2000s and early 2010s. And there was seemed to be a sense that if we could just continue to cut taxes and shrink government, that we are somehow going to ensure the state's prosperity. And what we saw is that that agenda wasn't working, that we ended up in a severe and prolonged and worsening budget crisis. And gradually, the legislators, although the political composition of the legislature didn't change, it was still a Republican supermajority, people realized that that wasn't working, that we were finding ourselves with the deepest common education cuts in the nation, the deepest higher education cuts, that individuals who were on in Medicaid and receiving mental health services were facing massive cuts. And eventually, we did see a pretty major course correction, which, you know, as you'll recall, many of your listeners recall, culminated in a $500 million tax increase early in 2018, including a significant increase in the taxes paid by the oil and gas industry. So as I look back on the decade that I had the fortune to lead OK Policy, that we really have seen a bit of a course change and things now beginning to move in a better direction.
What led to this decision to step down at this particular time for you, David?
A number of things. You know, I've actually been working in the legislative arena since the late 1990s. And say what you will about legislative term limits, I'm a strong believer in term limits for public policy people. So I've been through 23 legislative sessions, and it's kind of worn me out. And we're in a good place as an organization. We're in a better place as a state than we were in years before. And turned 55 this year. This gives me a decade more or less to do something else. And I'm really excited about being able to leave the organization in Onewake's very capable hands with a terrific staff that we've been able to develop over the years, and excited for my own future, but especially for the future of the organization.
So that segues to you, Onewake. I know you've been serving Indian people on a national level with the National Congress of American Indians on federal issues, and I assume some state issues, but mainly federal issues. What interests you in coming back to Oklahoma to work on state issues and state issues broadly?
So there is a big shift currently happening now, and actually it's been going on, right, for a while, of responsibilities moving from the federal government back to the state. And if we want to truly look at ways that we can impact and make local community change, then we've got to work on making sure that our states have the capacity and the resources, the infrastructure to be able to continue to lift and elevate these pieces. I can't imagine that the continued movement is going to change. Even with if we had an administrative change, we're going to continue to see movement going from the federal government back to the states and even localities. So it made a lot of sense to me that all of the work that I had been doing in a federal level, if I wanted to continue to see the impacts and things that we wanted to see done in our communities, that I needed to come home and make sure that that was happening for my nieces and for my cousins and for my grandma and grandpa.
Right. So you really see that devolution of authority from federal to the state happening regardless of political party control in Washington? You think that's a function of the judiciary that's becoming more and more conservative?
I do. I think it's a trend that we're going to continue to see, regardless if it's healthcare or veterans affairs, even federal programs, or for federal tribal programs, right? Tribes are wanting to run and operate their own programs at a greater and greater level. So I think we're going to continue to see that in ways that the federal government can become leaner and stronger and more efficient in the way that they're providing programs and services. That doesn't mean that, right, the trust responsibility or anything's going to move away anytime soon. But we are going to see a lot of communities stepping up and taking charge of, I think, their own programs in a way that we've not seen in a while.
Yeah. Well, you come into this organization, which, you know, for a long time, David was the face of the organization. Right. Now you have a roster of policy experts in every area. What's the next steps in OK Policy?
So that's really interesting because David was the face of the organization. And I think we're looking at how do we shift that and really make sure that OK Policy and the mission and the vision of the organization, it's what's front and center, and that it's going to exist beyond the people that are within it. That the need for the organization is so great, and that the need that the state has for our type of organization is so great that regardless of who's sitting in the seats, right, it's going to continue and perpetuate. My goal is to make sure that when my mom picks up one of the white papers from OK Policy, that she understands it, she can put it into practice, and that she feels empowered to call her legislator herself to be able to continue to voice those changes. The team thus far has done an incredible job of maintaining those direct relationships with some wonky folks, my type of folks, right, that know legislative work inside and out and can completely engage with that. But if we're going to continue this shift towards empowering our citizens, they need to make sure that they can understand the day-to-day nitty-gritty. So how are we going to make it relatable and usable to all Oklahomans?
So you see the future of OK Policy being like you'll have a roster of people, a roster of areas that will have a person there who is the go-to source.
That's right. And we're already making those changes.
Yeah, I mean, that's been happening. Yeah.
David has done a great job in establishing something called Together Oklahoma, which looks at how do we engage active volunteers within our community? How do we get them ready to, on a dime, turn, right, and be able to engage with legislatures or within their community areas? So we're going to be expanding that work. How do we make sure we have permanent staff in all four quadrants, right, of the state so that we're able to make really quick movements when we need to engage, or really just let the community know we're there, we're listening, and check in with them to make sure that we're doing the right things to continue to move Oklahoma forward.
My guest today is the new executive director of OK Policy, Anna Wake Rose, and the outgoing and former executive director, David Blatt, co-founder of OK Policy. There'll be an event tonight honoring David's legacy at the IDL Ballroom, and they join us today to talk about this transition and the future of OK Policy. Now, you've been involved on the federal level. Have you had much involvement with state? How do you go about either making new connections or reconnecting with state officials and people within government?
So I've done a lot of work around education within the state for several years. When the Every Student Succeeds Act passed, I was leading the National Indian Education Association, and Oklahoma was one of our key priority states. We spent a lot of time here working with Superintendent Hoffmeister and her staff to ensure that tribes and local communities were partnering together in a really effective way to lift and elevate the education for all students. But I will tell you, this is one of the most unique transitions I've ever had to an organization in that I've had the pleasure of being able to work directly with David. It's not a normality, I think, to have this type of transition.
Usually the old person leaves and the new person comes in and goes, you know, where's the coffee service?
That's right. And the board, our chair, Don Milliken, and David, they did a wonderful job of making sure that I wasn't going to be thrown to the wolves, you know, figuratively or literally. And David has really spent the last month introducing me to all the key folks within the state, right? Who is really at the table? Who should we be partnering with? And being able to help me establish what those relationships look like after I come back in for too long of a prolonged absence being gone.
Obviously, securing passage of State Question 802 will be an immediate priority for OK Policy. Beyond that, what are the next steps for the organization? What do you see as the big issues? Or is that too soon to say?
I think so. I think over the next year, you're going to see us going out and talking to Oklahomans a lot. We're going to come up with what the list of legislative priorities are, you know, for the next upcoming session. And then we're going to be thinking a lot about our strategic plan. And we're going to spend a lot of time actually out in Oklahoma talking to our community members and saying, you know, this is what we have done and this is what we're hearing from you. And does this make sense to continue to move forward? And I think in the next 6-9 months, you're going to see from us sort of a shift and thinking about what are the thematic changes that Oklahomans really want to see in their work. And how can we show that you can't work on criminal justice independent of healthcare, independent of education, and that all of the issues that we're working on at OK Policy and frankly that the nonprofits across the state are working on are really deeply interconnected. And so how can we build consensus and movement together?
My guest today, Anna Wake Rose, the new executive director of OK Policy, along with David Blatt, the outgoing executive director and co-founder of OK Policy. So we talk about the future of the organization. And that sounds very interesting. I don't think of, and I think of OK Policy as sort of a think tank, as most of them are usually cloistered in coming up with policy proposals. You're talking about really going out to the people of Oklahoma and finding out what's on their mind?
Absolutely. What's the effectiveness of the work that we're doing if it's not really impacting a day-to-day Oklahoman? If we're going to sit and write research papers independent of what our community really needs, then what's the effectiveness? I don't think that that necessarily changes what OK Policy has been doing anyways, though, right? They have had their touch points directly on the community through board members or through staff or through liaisons for a very long time. We're just going to work on how do we institutionalize that annually so that we make sure that we're connecting and course correcting if things are changing.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, NPR has been doing a lot of talking with ordinary voters. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is when you get a diverse group of voters together, you hear the same echo chamber that you hear in talk radio or you know, if you're NPR, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum, you hear these talking points that are the same talking points that congressional leaders of both parties are talking about. How do you get beyond that to really understand what's at the heart of voters' concern or a citizen's concern?
So I think Forbes magazine actually just posted something about saying the red state of Oklahoma is moving forward on Medicaid expansion. If we can get away from that rhetoric, right? It's not about red or blue. It's not about being Republican or Democrat. It's really about thinking what's going to improve all of the lives of our citizens. And you're exactly right. When you just sit down and talk to folks, they want to make sure that everyone has access to good, safe, affordable health care. They want to make sure everyone has access to a reliable public education system. And so when you can start hearing those things directly from our community members, then that sets and dictates, right, what our agenda should be. And that's what the governor has said as well in our legislature.
And I think, you know, you referred to the movement on issues that we've seen in recent years. And I think a lot of that's come from elected officials have to go knock doors every 2 years or 4 years in the case of the Senate. And they hear what people are talking about. And what I think Oklahomans have been talking about for the last 5 years is the state of our public education and the need to pay our teachers decently and address class sizes, the cost of higher education, issues around healthcare, around mental health, and the fact that we incarcerate people at the highest rate in the country and really in the world. And I think that hearing that, Republican candidates as well as Democratic candidates have sort of coalesced around more of a common sense, pragmatic agenda, which is to increase funding for our schools, expand access to health insurance coverage, provide necessary treatment for those with mental illness, and provide a more sensible approach on criminal justice. And, you know, I think we have seen some movement on all those issues.
I was struck by something Anna Wake said, which is that, you know, it's not a red or blue issue. And certainly I know your approach, David, has not been that because Oklahoma's never been a swing state. Hmm. It's never swung back and forth. For the first 70 years, it was an absolute blue state, and then it eventually swung to a red state. And I don't see any sense that that's going to change back anytime soon. I think this is a state that is pretty much ingrained in its voting habits. So it's a matter of persuading the party that's in power, isn't it?
I think it's voting to issues. It's not voting to people.
Okay.
Right? So issues are greater than the politics that are being engaged, right? And so that's one thing OK Policy does so well. They put the data out in front of folks and trust that they can make a good decision for what's going to happen for their community. And guess what they do, right? When you empower the citizen, when you empower a voter, when you empower my mom and dad, your mom and dad, to make decisions based on data and good information, they're going to make the right decision.
And, you know, what often happens is the politicians who are the most inflammatory, who are, you know, shouting into the bullhorn, get most of the attention. And there is almost a conspiracy of both sides to give the most extreme voices the greatest weight, because that riles up the base, or for the other party, you can look at the most outrageous thing that your opponent said and send out an email and fundraise off of it. And we sometimes mistake those most inflammatory extreme voices for the average elected official. And, you know, what we've always done through necessity to some extent, but it's the right strategy, is who are the persuadable officials and what are the arguments and tools we can use to persuade those who can be persuaded. And that means forgetting some of those who may be loudest and most prominent. And on issue after issue, there is a group of folks who can be persuaded. That doesn't mean that we always win the argument, but we can at least engage in the conversation and lay the groundwork for future discussions.
I want to talk, Anna Wake, about the areas that OK Policy looks at. They certainly look at budget. They look at taxation. They look at education, criminal justice. You look at health care. Is there another policy area that you would like to see OK Policy expand to? Or are those really the main issues when it comes to state government?
So we also have mental health is one of our priority issues, where we have a fellowship actually that looks at how do we develop good policymakers, right, to work within Oklahoma around mental health. And there are absolutely issues that I think are missing from the portfolio. However, whether they raise to the top to be priority issues for OK Policy, I think is yet to be seen. One thing in particular that I'm thinking a lot about is child welfare issues. As we think about the number of women that are incarcerated in the state, the long-term effects that's going to have on our foster care system, and then what's that going to do for our child welfare system as a whole. I'm deeply concerned personally about that, and then how we're going to show the cross connections between the long-term effects then on our criminal justice system, our juvenile justice system, our education system. So I think that's absolutely a space we're going to be considering. What does that mean for us over the next year?
I think another issue that Onawake has shown a lot of interest is the 2020 census.
That's right, absolutely. So we're looking at and thinking a lot about how do we expand our work from Together Oklahoma to engage in census outreach across the state. We all know the impact that the census is going to have. And I'm concerned that we have not seen a deep investment from our state thus far in showing and having any resources dedicated to it.
Many critics say the federal government has not shown a lot of interest as well.
That's true. Our appropriations for the census nationally have been detrimentally low, right? So again, it's going to take local communities, it's going to take nonprofits, it's going to take foundations, community-based organizations to get together and say, this is not okay, and we're going to do this work together. And that's what hopefully OK Policy is going to be doing pretty quickly.
Well, and the clock is ticking
that's
on
right.
this. I mean, we're talking April 1st is generally the census day.
That's right.
Of this coming year.
We're going to be pulling together a group of nonprofits and CBOs that are really interested in doing this work quickly, probably over the next 2 or 3 weeks. We know that there's already engagement efforts that are taking place. So what can OK Policy do to be a value added? To really educate folks about what's the true need for census and why it's important for the state. Really concerned about things like internet access, right? If all of the census base, the first round at least, is going to be online, does everyone have access to that? Not necessarily in the metropolitan areas, but out in rural Oklahoma. Our hard-to-count area, Southeast Oklahoma, is going to be absolutely a focus priority
and
area
certainly
for us.
Places in Eastern Oklahoma
That's
as
right.
well, yeah. And this event tonight, what's going to happen? Is there going to be any big announcements, or is it just a celebration?
I think it's primarily a celebration. Should mention it's 4:30 to 6:30 at the IDL Ballroom in downtown Tulsa. I'm extremely grateful that the organization is hosting this event to honor me. I think if there's any other agenda, we will be asking folks to contribute. We've set up a legacy fund to ensure that the great work that we've been able to do is able to continue as Onawake takes over leadership. So for those of your listeners who are not able to attend, you can also donate online at okpolicy.org. I think, you know, one of the things that has been most important for me doing this work is the recognition that we've got from a wide swath of Oklahomans who say that OK Policy is a vital organization, that they really rely on the information that we put out, the analysis that we do, the policy proposals, and that we really have filled the voice to present a specific point of view, making the case for expanded opportunity and equity for all Oklahomans, but also to have a place they can go to for reliable, data-driven information that you can use and depend on whatever your political persuasion or ideological persuasion is. So, I think that we've been able to create an organization, an institution that people respect and will continue to do so in the years ahead under Onawake's leadership.
Yeah, and we wish you great success in that, Onawake. And look forward to hearing from you more about the priorities for Oklahomans.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us on.
The Oklahoma Policy Institute's outgoing executive director, David Blatt, and new incoming executive director, Onawake Rose, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. OK Policy will pay tribute to David Blatt with a farewell event this afternoon at 4:30 at the IDL Ballroom in downtown Tulsa. You can meet them both there. For details on the event, visit okpolicy.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Connie Cronley.
I know we're supposed to be good sports and good citizens and community boosters, and I try. Lord knows how I try. But some days it's hard, and the thing that is making it hard today is the new downtown parking. I mean new in two ways. New downtown, of course we're happy to have it, and new downtown parking, not so much. It's a parking system seems to be created by a community with the giggles. Someone has grabbed a can of white street paint and run hey nani nani through several Tulsa streets. Suddenly there are parallel parking spaces on streets that were through streets just yesterday. And what are those skinny lanes here and there? Bicycle lanes? How am I supposed to know that? Now the downtown parking spaces themselves are baffling. Some are parallel, some are angled with nose in, some are angled with backing in. I imagine a guy convulsed with laughter when he came up with that idea, saying, hey, everybody, watch this. But the cruelest of all are the new parking meters. Whoever invented these is hiding behind corners to watch the fun. He's the same kid who used to knock on doors and run away. All of this newness is a lot to deal with. Just yesterday, I used to be able to ride my pony right up to the saloon and tired of the hitching post. And Sundays, I'd load the wagon with the kids and Grandma and a big ham and tie up in front of the church. That's what I want now. A big hitching post. And a big cable, like a bicycle lock. I'll crawl under the car and hook it to the front axle and wrap it around the hitching post and go about my business. Not now. First, I have to find a parking place. Then I have to find the gadget that is a new parking meter for a row of cars. I've tried this in the rain, which makes it even more riotous. And then, remember my space number and my car tag number and the name of my mother's first pet and have my credit card at the ready. I'm encouraged to use a smartphone to do this, but I don't have a smartphone. Okay, all together now. You don't have a smartphone? It makes people feel good to say that. No, I don't have a smartphone. It's one tiny rebellion against Uncle Tech. Now, without a smartphone, I could call on a regular phone for these new parking gadgets and set up an account. Is there any way to make this more complicated? I looked around for a downtown ambassador to help me. I know we have them. Teams of them, because I've seen them rousting homeless people, but none was in sight. Neither was a traffic officer, but one materialized and ticketed my car. $25, thank you. I was grousing about all of this to my friend Carolyn, a woman my age, and she told me how she handles this confounding conundrum. She said, oh, I think downtown parking is so complicated and so unfriendly, I just don't go downtown anymore. What a simple solution. I'll be more like Carolyn and stay away until hitching posts come back in style. Let's see how long it takes for someone to call us and tell us they miss us downtown. I'll bet we'll have a long, peaceful wait.
Writer, author, and columnist Connie Cronley is a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.